Okay, so welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, where we look at TV programs from the 2000s and before. Today we're Star Trekking across the universe with Star Trek The Next Generation, which was a TV show that aired between 1987 and 1994. And today we're here with Gypsy.
Hello.
Angus.
Hello.
Lisa.
Engage.
Jeanette.
Hi.
And Alex.
Hey.
Today's episode, we're going to be looking at Season 5, Episode 2, and it's called Darmok, but it's...
Darmok.
Darmok. This was selected by Gypsy.
Yes.
And Gypsy knows it by another name. What name is that, Gypsy?
It's the same name. It's just the whole title is Darmok and Jalat at Tanagra.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Could you repeat that?
Darmok and Jalat at Tanagra.
And what does that mean?
It'll make sense in the
episode.
I need a universal translate.
That's the thing. The meaning of the phrase is the point of the episode, almost.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, us explaining it now doesn't misses the episode's point.
And you have plenty more opportunities to hear that phrase being said throughout the episode.
Yes.
I truly think, like Gypsy straight up said, this is the episode we should do if we were going to do Star Trek Next Gen. I don't think anyone disagreed. I think to me, Star Trek, this is a perfect episode.
It is. Oh, that and the one where the probe knocks Picard out and he lives the entire lifespan in another culture, that is my second favourite.
You like that one? Well, is that the flute one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I really liked it purely because of the way that this culture wanted to live on, even though they were going to be wiped out from global warming. I thought it was really nice.
Supernova. That just gave me goosebumps. So.
It's beautiful.
It's a really good episode. But this one's great because they show it, from what I've been told, in universities communication courses, because they're like, this is what happens and this is how communication can affect a lot of things that we do and say, and misinterpretation of things as well. So I like it a lot.
So of course we've previously watched the Star Trek the original series, because what, 1966 or something, and so this is much later. This is 20 years later. It's even after Star Trek the animated series. And there were movies prior to this, I think. So there were a few movies. This is where they decided to change cast entirely. Picard, Donna Troy, Riker. Who else is in there?
Data.
Geordi.
Troy's.
No, you said Donna Troy.
Donna Troy. Oh, yes.
Like Donna Sutton.
Diana Troy.
It's also a really good contrast between original series and Next Gen. Yeah, it's a bit of a culture shock.
Because it's like the best things Kirk does is punch aliens and woo women, whereas the best things that Picard does is give speeches and do honourable things.
Yeah, and the whole entire thing is basically, we need peace in the galaxy. We don't want to be at war all the time.
Yeah. Peace and love doesn't necessarily mean getting it off with every single funny-looking alien chick you can find. Though... Riker sometimes needs to just calm it down.
That was my experience of it, was series 2, where every episode was almost Love Boat.
We don't talk about series 2.
I actually stopped watching Star Trek.
Because it's got Kransky in it.
Yeah, and I'm not the biggest fan of Beverly Crusher, but... Yeah, no, it kind of went a little bit sideways season 2, didn't it?
Well, she wasn't in season 2.
Exactly,
I prefer
it's
her.
Kransky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get on with it. We'll go off and watch Darmok from Star Trek The Next Generation, and we'll let you know what we thought.
Wait, how can you not like the Dancing Doctor?
The Dancing Doctor.
Beverly Crusher.
It's not that I don't like her. I just,
I'll
she's not.
Your brains about it later.
Gates McFadden, you know, I'm not a huge fan of her as Crusher, but she did choreograph Labyrinth, which is one of my favourite movies.
She choreographed Labyrinth.
She is a choreographer. She has two names. So when she's Gates McFadden, that's her acting stuff. And when she's Cheryl McFadden, that's her choreography stuff. So she actually has two titles that she goes by. So she was in one of the Muppets. She was in Muppets Take Manhattan, like as an actor, because she choreographed a lot of the Muppet stuff.
That's awesome.
I know, right? So
not a huge fan
of Beverly Crusher. Big fan of her as a person.
All I know about the Star Trek thing with like Data playing like the violin and
Riker
playing trombone and stuff is they go, what are your talents? Let's put them in the actual thing.
Oh, so they actually found out what they're good at and then used it as part of the character.
Yeah. So that's actually really, really cool. Worf teaches like Tai Chi or something. And he actually is a teacher from what I've heard.
I know he's a pilot as well, apparently.
Okay.
Sorry, Justin. Let's watch the show.
Okay, so that was Star Trek Next Generation, Darmok and Chenagra.
Darmok and Jalad at Chenagra.
Yeah.
That's it.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, that such was a good so episode. Great that episode. Was so good.
Yeah, I agree. I'm amazed. Flawless. That's not the Star Trek Next Generation that I remember.
Yeah, yes. It gets amazing in the later seasons. They actually understand the formula and what they need to be.
Yeah. So really, you don't remember that one?
No, I don't remember that one. It really reminded me. The beginning really came across like there's an episode where they meet the Gorn. It's called Arena.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's the one where they joke about in later.
Original series.
That's where they meet the Gorn and they have to fight the Gorn on the planet. And this can, so it sets it up to look like that. But then there's a later episode where they have to sort of put away the universal translator and try and use a few simple words to try and sort of reconcile with some enemy. And he has to risk his own life to do that. And this came across a lot like that as well. So it had those elements from the old series, I think.
Jenna, have you seen this one before either?
I haven't seen this episode before, no.
So what do you think, being new to the episode?
Yeah, no, it was great. And it was better than most of the Next Generation episodes, probably, I would recall. Definitely.
It's incredible. It's just incredible.
Yeah. So you're saying, Gypsy, that you think that was outstanding. How does it sit compared with the rest of the episodes in that series?
I have a list of go-to episodes. So I think it's like a max of 12. I will always watch them. I'll always try and pick them out because they're just incredible. And this one stands out with a lot of them. Like, just same level as a couple of others. Like, there's one called Frame of Mind where Riker goes down to try and, I don't know if it's like doing sleuthing work, but he ends up getting put into this insane asylum and getting told that he's not a starship first officer and stuff. But he's also doing a play as well for Beverly Crusher. And so the entire time he's like acting on stage. No, he's in the asylum. No, he's back on stage. Yeah. And it's like, it's an incredible piece. Like, it's really nice.
It's really well written.
Yeah. That would probably be my like second one out of this and that.
So. I forgot about that one. That one's really good too.
Yeah.
But it's kind of, it's a little bit twisted. It's not quite,
it's almost, it's not quite canon. As well. Yeah. It's nice. So
it's not formulaic, sorry. Yeah.
So I really like the way this episode, it starts out looking like they're about to go into mortal combat.
Yes.
And then like it turns around so that they're fighting a common enemy, and then there's the big save scene at the end. It's fantastic. Yeah. Not saving everyone, however.
I just love how when, you know, they're having the big battle with the beast and Gypsy and I are just getting so angry because they're trying to teleport him and it's like, what a beast!
It's great. Angus, what do you think about the episode?
I really like this episode. I've seen it before and I think I do love how just polar opposite it illustrates Picard to be compared to Kirk. Kirk's that very gung-ho, I'm gonna,
he would have like, been knife in hand
immediately.
Do you think Kirk would have been battling the guy before he knew it?
Oh yeah definitely. As soon as he threw down the knife to Picard, Kirk would have been the one
I actually kind of like the fact that Riker's quite like Kirk. When you watch the episode, the entire thing is like, I want to attack them, but Picard would yell at me, so peacefully.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
But there's such a contrast between the first officer.
That's certainly Riker's role. His role is to be the action man.
He's the Kirk, really.
He is the Kirk.
What would have been if Kirk had been the second in charge and not the captain, and how differently would things have been?
Yeah.
So, Jeanette, do you think this stacked up with what you've seen before with Star Trek?
I think this was probably better than a lot of what I recall. It has been a long time since I've watched Star Trek.
Certainly better than what I recall.
Yeah. And again, you'd say you only watched the first two seasons.
I only watched the first two seasons.
Yeah.
Well, not even most of the way through the second season.
Yeah.
And they haven't really found their feet by it.
Yeah.
I think we were on the verge of being cancelled for
like
the
it was all Love Boat in there.
Yeah.
We watched episodes together that were third or fourth season. Definitely
probably
second season.
Probably, yeah. It was very intermittent,
most of
though.
What I watched would have been third or fourth season. Yeah. When they were in the holodeck. I saw the holodeck.
God. I always cringe a bit when they start doing the holodeck. When, as soon as, you know, Picard puts on a fedora, Riker starts chatting up the chick at the jazz bar, Data puts on the Sherlock Holmes hat,
please,
I was just like, nah,
no
skip.
I was looking at those episode names going, oh God, I don't think I'd ever want to watch those.
No, there's actually, alright, look, seriously, there's an amazing holodeck episode. Like, it's kind of like a shore leave sort of episode, and Data's like, I'm going to try and integrate with the computer, you know, so we can coincide and I can get a whole heap more information faster. Easy done. Picard goes, go for it. Yells at Ford, tells him to go hang out with his son in the holodeck. So they do a spaghetti western sort of thing, where every single evil villain ends up being as fast and as smart as Data. And so you've got like 20 people acting as Data in like really bad American western sort of accents. And it's amazing because then it becomes a, oh my god, they might actually die because one of our droids decided, hey, this would be a great idea.
Did he get a cat?
Who can
yes, he has.
Yeah. The cat. He saves the cat and Spot becomes a very favourite
companion. So they do Westworld
in the... Yeah, basically. It's hilarious. But like at the end of it, they don't fully fix the computer, and so one of the harlots in the holodeck runs out and it's Data like in this corset with boobs and stuff going, yoo-hoo, don't forget to come back anytime, Worf. And Worf's just like...
It's very Rimmerworld, isn't it? Yeah. The episode of Red Dwarf where all of the characters were...
I think my head's hurting now.
It is the best Holo episode, like, in Next Gen. It's like season 7, so...
I think if we go back, I know we've got so many episodes on the list that we couldn't ever go back, but it'd be, I'd say, great with a grain of salt, but I think it'd be great to juxtapose an awesome episode like this with some of just... They have some awful, awful episodes. And they are just so cringy. And one of the most wonderful things is when we first got Netflix a few years back, one of the first things I binge watched was Star Trek Next Gen and watched the whole series from start to end. And there's something wonderfully awful about watching Star Trek Next Gen with Netflix HD because some of those practical effects look really awful. There's the one where Tasha Yar dies, which is, you know, that's a touching episode, but that sludge monster, man, it's literally a dude with a black blanket on him, and it's so bad with the HD, you know, and makeup, some of the makeup practical effects look really dodgy. Really dodgy. And not even some of them rubbery. It's just you can see the patchiness of the foundation of the makeup
early,
and it's
early Data is the best because it's so bad. Like in that first episode of Farpoint Station, and you can see like how shiny and repulsively sweaty it kind of looks.
Yes.
As he's like walking through the forest on the holodeck trying to whistle. Oh, that's what he does.
So Alex, what did you think of the episode?
Yeah, I just realizing how much, because I watched Trek a bit later than this, so I grew up more watching Voyager stuff, so I'm realizing how much of the Next Generation I haven't actually watched. So I've been in bits and pieces, but like a few major ones, like going back later, but most of the episodes that say the Spaghetti Western one, I've not actually seen it, so I need to go back to it. But yeah, so this is an episode I like because it's one of the few I can remember off the top of my head. I've seen it all the way through, and you know, just because I haven't seen many of them. Apparently.
I'm a big fan of Voyager. I can't wait till we do Voyager. And I know Voyager, she's very polarizing. A lot of people don't like Janeway, but I'm a big fan of Janeway.
I think she's great.
She's badass.
Yeah. I didn't mind her in the couple of episodes I saw,
We binge watched Next Gen and then we went on to Voyager. Yeah. And like Next Gen, some of the episodes are just awful. Some are great. But Janeway, oh my God. There's some episodes. And so, you know, in that same way that Kirk will either make love to it or kill it. And, you know, Picard is very much the diplomat and he very much follows, you know, the rules and the prime directives and things like that. And Janeway is just a hard ass. And then I know there's one episode where she's fighting some weird kind of chaotic, I don't know what it is. It's some dude in a clown suit. It's a bit of a weird...
Oh, that one. Yeah,
it's a weird episode. But at the very end, the whole episode's awful.
Yeah, I actually can't explain this because I remember this one. It's basically an artificial intelligence in a suspended animation thing, but it goes insane and it treats the beings in its care as trying to scare them to feed its fear thing or whatever.
So
Janeway is like, okay, I'm going to risk myself and let it free everybody else and have just me there.
And then she does something like she does some kind of trick so then he thinks she's in there but she's not in there. So then because he's got nothing to feed off anymore, he just starts dying. And at the very end, it's Michael McKean from, you know, Spinal Tap, and he's just like, help me. And she's like, no. And I'm like, oh my God, she's so awesome. Yeah. And I think one thing I did love about this episode is it showcases Picard's leadership and his abilities and what he brings to the table. You watch an episode like this and you go, that's why you're captain.
Oh, well, this must be why they're bringing back the next series. Which starts, by the way, tomorrow.
As we're recording this, I should say. Although I'm kind of sceptical just because, like, I notice a lot of stuff they bring back and it turns out mediocre because they're assuming it's going to... Like, I just assume, like, half of the stuff they bring back ends up being terrible or it ends up being not as good as the original stuff.
Never know, they might do it.
I refuse to let that happen with this. I refuse to let that happen.
I think it's a watch the Locutus episodes before you jump into the new season, by the looks of things from what I've heard.
It's purely
because you get a backstory on Picard and the Borg and that sort of relationship. Sure. Because they've got Seven of Nine back.
And that was
Q back as well.
Yes.
Oh, they have brought Q back. Oh,
Hugh of Borg. Remember Hugh the Borg that they... Apparently they've got a different actor playing Hugh. And I'm like, Hugh's in this. Oh my goodness. Does anyone want to explain who Hugh is?
Because the Borg are basically de-individualized robot people.
Yeah. Men from Doctor Who.
And so they grab one and they teach it individuality again. And so it calls itself Hugh. And it was in one episode. I'm not sure what happened at the end of the episode, but basically it would just have one Borg drone and actually having individuality. I'm like,
didn't they use him as a weapon?
They release him back into the collective so he can kind of...
He teaches them individuality. Yes.
He's like a virus.
He's
like a virus, yes.
And then you find out in Voyager halfway through that Hugh's created kind of this dream realmscape thing for a lot of the Borg to continue their own individuality in their own way. And so when they're awake, they have to be a part of the hive. And when they're asleep, they actually live in this kind of sanctuary sort of thing. And they're all as they normally are. And so Seven of Nine tries to help free them.
There was a movie as well that actually covered a bit of the Borg.
First Contact's probably one of my favourites. It's definitely my favourite Next Gen movie.
The only good Next Gen movie, sorry.
I was a bit disappointed with them bringing in a queen, though. They're supposed to be a hive mind, and then it turns out they've got a queen.
I think they're trying to make it like a bee type of...
That's where that's come from.
I get it.
It's easier for weakest link sort of stuff, though.
And it's also really hard to convey, like, an amorphous, everybody's just individual as a blob. It's really hard to convey that plot-wise. Having this individual as the head of the organisation, it kind of makes sense plot-wise so they can just expand on what they're doing and that it's easier to convey stuff that way.
And it's also easier to go, this is how these guys are going to take this down and it's going to be effective, as opposed to, you've got a massive hive, it doesn't matter if you cut off this bit because there's still that over there enjoying.
I also just love how the fact that just, like, they do a thing and then they've adapted so it doesn't work anymore. Whoops. And then it just...
So I know I'm asking the wrong people here, but how do you think this stacked up with, you know, some of the current sci-fi you're watching? Is it better?
I think it's more sci-fi in the sense that this is entirely philosophical. Like, this plot wouldn't make sense if it's just lasers and zoom-zoom space battles. And a lot of the modern stuff is just zoom-zoom space battles. I think it's also a lot of recent series, they're aping off the scripted storyline thing. So it's one huge continuous storyline split into hour-long sections. And so that's to tell the story very differently to the way this can be. We can just, like, this is their world and we'll never see the Tamarians again.
Yes.
And that's okay because they're just here to...
So Babylon 5 was the instigator of that to some degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Along with all most of British TV.
But. Yeah, and the problem is that now everybody is trying to make series like that because now it's on Netflix. Now you can watch it in one go.
It's binge-worthy, whereas this, it had some of those part two, part threes and would hark back to certain storylines, but it tended to be quite... standalone formulaic because it was
actually what I didn't like about Star Trek was the standalone. That's why I didn't like it.
Right.
It just felt, it doesn't matter if you watch next week or not.
That's it.
Doesn't matter if you miss an episode, nothing's ever going to change. And that really frustrated me. That's why I like it to be fine.
Okay.
Because it changes. Oh my God, it's a real story. Perhaps because I was brought up on English television. So I was used to stories with a beginning and an end that spread out over several episodes.
I remember that episode in B5, which we must watch sometime, where something actually changed completely at the end. Mm-hmm. So suddenly they're at war, and Jeanette's going, what? How is that possible?
I expect it to just be another Star Trek. So that's actually what I disliked about Star Trek, was that episodic nature of it. That's why I didn't like it. In a series that covers, you know, a story, you can still have episodes that do tackle interesting questions. I mean, this episode tackled a very interesting dilemma. How do you learn the stories without the language that the need to have to understand the language? It was a catch-22, and that was a really interesting idea about language and communication. So it was, I think, a really interesting episode, but... Yeah. I still do prefer the story, not individual episodes.
Yeah, but you can't really teach a story like that in a long storyline very easily without having it be an A plot and a B plot. The B plot's giving the storyline.
Yes.
And for me, I have a real bias, for better or worse. To me, I think because of my upbringing, and I think this was kind of my primary exposure to sci-fi. So for a long time, it was like when you say sci-fi, I think Star Trek. But I don't know the original Star Trek when I'm a child. I know Next Gen because that's on TV when I'm at my pivotal years. So to me, for a long time, and still to this day, when you say sci-fi, I say Star Trek. Sci-fi, Star Trek.
Yeah. And it's also, like you get used to, every line with Geordi LaForge was technobabble. It's like, that's how sci-fi works. You do technobabble to explain the plot.
Yeah, and you kind of went, oh, here's the technobabble, and I went, yeah, I tuned out. In that same way when we watched Cowboy Bebop, where it was Bebop, like, and you're going, oh, cool, they're showing the ship moving, and I'm like, yeah, tuned out. And that's something that some people go, ooh, technobabble, ooh, the mechanics of the ship, and again, that's not the part that I tuned
into. My favourite moment in any sci-fi was in Interstellar, when the ship was spinning to match the spin of the crashing, like, station sort of thing, just that matching
trying spin. To match
That was the coolest moment ever. It was really simple.
The best is actually when
Galaxy Quest.
Oh. When they're like, what happens when we get to zero? We've never gotten to zero. Best techno babble.
Really? Yes. I'm thinking Galaxy Quest 2 when they ring the boy who's the total techno babble nerd and he tells them the outline of the ship is.
Galaxy Quest is an incredible movie. Whenever they do the Star Trek ratings of which movies are the best and which ones are the least favourite, Galaxy Quest always gets included and usually outranks a lot of the Star Trek movies. Yeah. It is more Star Trek than a Star Trek movie.
And your Galaxy Quest rating
compared to this?
No, not yet. No.
What's your rating on Galaxy Quest? How long ago since you've seen it?
It was in the past year, I think.
Yes.
Okay, so watching Star Trek adds a lot to Galaxy Quest. Mm-hmm. I remember watching Galaxy Quest before I watched any Star Trek.
Oh.
I think my introduction to Star Trek initially was the movies by J.J. Abrams.
Bad
start. It's okay, I corrected myself. I started playing the Star Trek MMO, and then from there, the original series. But yeah, watching the Star Trek TV series added so much. The original series added so much to Galaxy Quest. So if you haven't seen Star Trek, 3.5. If you have seen Star Trek... easily 4.5.
We're talking out of 5.
Out of 5.
Out of 5.
I thought we moved it to 10.
We moved it to 10, but I decided that wasn't as just ridiculous, so I brought it back down to
10. Next month it'll be out of 20.
I love this episode. I've seen a couple of other episodes that I wouldn't rate as highly, but this is definitely a 4.5 stars.
So as good as Galaxy Quest.
Only after watching Star Trek.
We're going to have to do a Galaxy Quest special one.
Oh, definitely. To me, I kind of go, like, Star Trek Next Gen, I love it. That is a 5. And there are definitely some half-star episodes. There are some doozies. It goes across the gamut.
The only one I can remember is the one everybody hates from Voyager, the episode where they go to Transwarp and Paris becomes a lizard for no reason.
Oh, God, that's ridiculous. There's also a season one episode of Next Gen where I think it's like an invasion of the body snatchers or something and they've got, like, insects in their ear or something. That's another one to watch in Netflix HD. It looks horrific. It's so bad.
I think the worst one I've ever seen was people were disappearing off the ship while they slept and being like experimented on or tortured, depending on how you decided to think about it. And they're like, all right, let's get into the holodeck and try and work out. And like,
of course,
there were about 4 or 5 people that were describing this situation. And I feel like that was the most cringy episode because it's like, I was on a...
Was that the one with the cake?
No.
That's a different one.
Cringy one. Okay.
Actually, because I know we've not mentioned the elephant in the room, Wesley Crusher.
Oh, he's not there. Yeah. Oh,
he wasn't in that episode. It was amazing. Right?
There was an interview I listened to with Will Wheaton years ago, and apparently, you know, he's a teenager and he wants to buy a car and he wants to have, you know, cash on him and all the rest of it. So he's trying to negotiate a serious pay rise. And they said, we can't offer you more money, but we can give Wesley Crusher a promotion. And he's like, that's not going to pay for my sports car. And I think that's how he left the show. He was like, nah.
Yeah. And Attack fans all rejoice because they did not like him at all.
I wanted to like him. And he was my age when I was watching it, so I get that. Yeah. But
See, I'm different. He was my age when watching it as well, and I actually really appreciated it. I thought it was really cool, and it was a job that I always wanted when I was growing up.
And I think I appreciated it more when I was younger, but now I go back and I watch them now, and they're quite...
Oh, he's a little shit.
Cringe. He's quite cringy, And there's Picard's line, shut up, Wesley, you know, and it's just like, if I just want to say that in so many episodes.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was Star Trek Next Generation. So next we're watching the Picard series.
Yes, we're doing a special.
A special, so I don't know when that'll be, but...
Heads up, I'll probably cry.
Oh.
I'm a happy crier. I reckon I'm going to cry when all of the characters come back.
I'm not going to lie, I was ready to cry at the end of that episode. Oh, I was so there, because I was like... overjoyed at how amazing it was.
I wanted to stand up and give a standing ovation. It was just so good. When he does that speech and they're all like, and the lights come back on, it's just like, oh, yes!
Yes.
I remember watching this season five, from season four to season five, I remember just watching it through overnight. I think it was about 6 a.m. I saw this episode and at the end I got up going, yeah! And we were in a share house at the time. And the guy that owned the share house walked out and went, what the f-? Oh, you're watching, and sat down and watched it with me.
So we'll see you all next time for Picard.
Yay!
And that was the Cult TV Club. Thank you very much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.